The MMA on the Rocks podcast is intended for adult audiences. If you are not an adult, please do not let your parents know you're listening to this, and don't repeat anything you hear on this show in front of them. Also a reminder that even if you fight recklessly, please drink responsibly. Now that we have all that covered, let's start the show. Welcome to MMA on the Rocks. My name is Bill Welker. You are listening to episode 320 of the podcast. Unless you're joining live on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube, subscribe on one of those channels if you want to catch a show live. Hopefully everybody missed that last like 2 minutes or so that I went live and I didn't have anything set up properly. If you did catch that, please ignore. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Today is Sunday, July 9th. I hope everybody had a fantastic 4th of July. Those of you who live here in the States celebrating the birthday of our great United States of America, watching some fireworks, barbecuing, drinking a few beers even, whatever you happen to do. And if you don't live in the United States, I hope you had a great July 4th as well. You can still have a great day, even if you're not celebrating anything. And I hope you did. All right, folks. Awesome card, UFC 290. Last night, I can say, finally back to doing an episode on a Sunday. And it was tricky this week because the wife is away on business. She's currently in Atlanta. For those of you who have been listening for a while, every now and then we go to Atlanta together to do a trade show, the America's Mart in Atlanta. And my wife went solo this time with her mother to do the show. Usually I go and set up her booth and build the furniture and everything like that. Instead, I shipped it all with all the tools, everything she needs to get everything up and running, even though she hit a few speed bumps with it. It seemed like a great idea at the time because we decided we can't both keep going since our daughter's starting kindergarten in the fall. So I said, all right, well, let's do a test run over the summer. You go to the show and I'll stay behind with the kiddo. Man, I have so much respect for any single parents out there because it's not easy, man. I mean, granted, it's summertime, so there's like no chance for a break. Tomorrow, she's going to be in a little summer camp, but only for like 3 hours, which is like nothing. There's just no break. I mean, I love my daughter to death. I love her more than anything in this whole world. But the kid's a handful. She is a handful and a half. She's just got nonstop energy. So the next 7 to 8 days are going to be planned around me trying to find ways to tire her out. I managed to get her to sleep finally at like 10 o'clock. hopefully my wife's not watching this. And hearing that I had kept her up till 10 o'clock. But man, it's just tough. There's just so many things to do. You know, keeping up with the house and food. Like I got to feed her every day, like multiple times a day. It's crazy, man. When my wife gets back from this trip, I'm going to be sure to, I don't know. I got to get her flowers or something. I got to make sure she sticks around because I couldn't do this by myself. It'd be too hard. So much respect to all you single parents out there. You guys are fighting the good fight. And I don't mean the single parents that just like drop their kid off at the grandparents every day and wipe their hands clean of their responsibilities. I'm talking about the single parents that are, you know, actually like working a job and taking care of their kid full time. Cheers to all of you. I don't know how you do it. That's just like, I don't understand how people are preschool teachers. And this is coming from a former middle school teacher. People always used to tell me, like, I don't know how you teach middle school. I'm like, I don't know how anybody would teach elementary school or like preschoolers with, how do you deal with like 30 toddlers at once? I can't even bring one. Like, I don't know, man. In any case, I fed her. She was well fed today. She actually ate healthy, which is a win, because usually I have to negotiate with like some sort of snacks. But yeah, you know, she did the right thing. Her playroom might be a disaster area, like a bomb went off in it, because while I was cooking dinner and cleaning the kitchen and stuff, she decided to do some arts and crafts on her own and just tear the shit out of the room. In any case, UFC 290, unfortunately, I was so exhausted trying to keep up with this kid. Believe it or not, guys, and the Australians are going to be especially upset with me, I fell asleep during the main event. I made it like halfway through round one, and when I woke up, it was like the end of Volkanovski's victory speech. So I was like, well, I guess he won. So I turned it off and went to bed just feeling totally defeated. Not as defeated as Yair Rodriguez probably felt, but I'd say it was comparable, man. You know, trying to keep up with a five-year-old all day. I took her to a buddy's house, and she was swimming in their pool, trying to drain the batteries a little bit, but that drains mine as well. So I did not make it through the main event. I did go back and watch it this morning, but I did not get to see it live. What can you say about Alexander Volkanovski, man? He's just like, a lot of people say, okay, pound for pound, best fighter in the world. I'm not even totally sure what that means anymore. I feel like it's something that gets tossed around. Like, for me, it's still John Jones. But Volkanovski, man, like, who's going to beat this guy at 145 pounds? Okay, pound for pound rankings aside, let me pull up the UFC rankings here, which I'm sure are going to be looking pretty wonky by tomorrow. But the man is just, here's what I'll say. He might be the best at creating a game plan and sticking to it in the history of the UFC. That's what I would say about Alexander Volkanovski. He knows what he has to do, and he goes out there and executes it, which is a hell of a lot easier said than done. You know, it's like Mike Tyson, the famous Mike Tyson quote, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. That's true. I mean, you get hit a couple times, and he didn't take much damage in this fight, but he got caught with a couple of elbows on the bottom from Yair. He just stayed the course. He used pretty much the blueprint that Frankie Edgar put out there for beating Yair Rodriguez, and just made sure that Yair was not comfortable throughout the entire fight. He just smothered him, which is what you have to do with guys who like to throw a lot of spinning attacks. You know, I say this all the time. The way to deal with spinning attacks, you have to either stay out of range or you have to smother them. It's one or the other. So he smothered him, but he did it just so tactically. And he broke him, man. You know, Yair seemed like almost too comfortable to be on his back. He wasn't working nearly hard enough to try and get back up to his feet where he was going to have the best chance of possibly staging a comeback in this fight. you know, Volkanovski just did everything he had to do. And it's like, well, what do we do? What challenge do we present for this guy? You know, he moved up and yeah, it was competitive with Islam, but I don't know if there's really an appetite for that rematch largely. You know, maybe down the line a little bit, if Islam wins a few and Volkanovski, you know, stays looking like this. He said he's going to need to take some time off. I think he needs some surgery on his arm or his hand or something like that. So we're going to have to see what his next move is going to be. I'm sure him and his team, like City Kickboxing, just they just put together such great game plans, like in and out of the cage. You know, they really strategize to put their fighters in positions to succeed. They might be the best gym at doing that in general. So congratulations to Volk on like probably a career defining performance. You know, cause we've seen him look good, but yeah, that was just dominant. It was just like a masterclass level performance. And International Fight Week, you know, one of the biggest cards of the year. How could you ask for more out of one of your champions than a performance like that? As for Yair Rodriguez, it's like, man, what a crash and burn there. I would kind of be interested in the Brian Ortega rematch, maybe, because that fight did have like a bit of a weird ending with the shoulder injury of Ortega. I know it was caused by Yair, but I would kind of like to see how that one would go again. As for Volkanovski, I mean, there's Arnold Allen and there's Ilya Topuria. And Volkanovski kind of mentioned Topuria's name. I think that's a fun fight. I would love to see that one. I don't know if Volkanovski will have a desire, because Aljamain Sterling has made it clear that after he fights Sean O'Malley, I think it's in September, October, something like that. After he fights him, he's moving up to 145, like win or lose. If he beats O'Malley and does it like in an impressive dominant fashion, then I guess you have to do Aljamain versus Volkanovski. You know, a lot can happen between now and then. Who knows when Volkanovski is going to be ready to get back in there. You know, maybe he'll already have a fight booked by the time that fight happened. But other than that, it's like, what else do you do? He's pretty much cleaned out this division. Unless, you know, if Max Holloway destroys Korean Zombie, we're not doing Max Holloway and Volkanovski 4. Even though I think a majority of us believe that series should be 2-1. Yeah, nobody wants to see that again. We don't. Why are we going to have guys fight a fourth time when one guy won three fights? And I would rather see Max Holloway move up to 155 than Volkanovski, to be honest. Like, Volkanovski doesn't need to move up. Like, he's a 145er. Like, it's great that he did and he wants to take on those challenges, but it's not like he outgrew this weight class physically. Like, he is a 145-pound fighter. That's where he belongs. You know, I don't need to see him, like, changing divisions just for the sake of it. And if you go down the line, you know, Josh Emmett lost. Calvin Kattar would have to put like several good wins together to get to a title shot. Giga Chikadze and Volkanovski, I feel like, would be an interesting fight, but we may just see Volk do exactly what he did to Yair Rodriguez. And then it kind of falls short there. The only answer is, you know, Edson Barboza. Another couple of wins for Edson Barboza, that might be interesting as well. I don't think they've fought. But man, what a great performance by Volkanovski. Just you know, under the brightest lights and like with all the highs and lows of watching his teammates fight before him, just, you know, goes in there, gets his lunch pail and goes to work. Like, you got to respect a guy. He's a great champion. Co-main event. This fight was kind of weird for me. Just scoring the fight, I scored it for Alexandre Pantoja. But I feel like Brandon Moreno was the better fighter. And I know that sounds weird, but I just felt like Pantoja had to keep taking it to the ground because he was getting his ass whipped. And then he was able to hold Moreno down there. There wasn't a whole lot of threat of submission, and he kind of seemed like very sluggish and tired, but he was still able to hold Moreno down long enough to win the rounds. Now, I think I only gave Brandon Moreno the second round, which was weird because at the end of the fight, I felt like Moreno had done more damage to Pantoja, but logically I couldn't score the fight for Moreno. I only gave him the second round, and that second round I felt like was the most dominant round of the fight. I mean, credit to Pantoja for hanging in there, but like, this was just weird for me. Like, he got his ass beat, but won the fight. And it's such a strange occurrence. I can't remember something like this ever happening, except for maybe like Aljamain Sterling, Peter Yan won, where Aljamain was clearly losing the fight and then he wins by DQ. And like, I don't want to equate it to that, but it's like, I don't know, when it was over, like, yeah, I scored it 4-1 for Pantoja, but I still felt like Brandon Moreno was the better fighter. I don't know how else to say it other than that. I know I'm just being redundant here. That's because this fight has left me like a little befuddled, I guess. So, man, what do you do with these guys now? Because here you have, so Pantoja wins the belt in like a really close fight. I mean, one judge even gave it to Moreno. I don't know what the fuck they were watching. I don't know who the judge was, but I know I heard Adelaide Bird's name at one point, who's just like notoriously horrible. I don't know why I ever let her crazy ass come in here and judge fights. I don't think it was her. One judge gave it to Moreno. And it was a close fight, but do you rematch these guys? Because Pantoja now has beaten Moreno 3 times. You know, including, did the Ultimate Fighter fight count? I need to look at this. Let's look at the record here now. All right, so I know it's been a while. All right, so in 2018, he beat Brandon Moreno at UFC Fight Night 129. And he beat some guy named Bruno Moreno in 2009. So I guess okay. So that it only counts as an exhibition. 2016, he submitted him on the Ultimate Fighter. So obviously both of these guys have gotten a lot better. They're championship caliber fighters now. I don't know what to say here because I don't believe they should fight again. But, like, how do you say that Brandon Moreno doesn't deserve another shot at his title after losing it by split decision? The guy's fought, what, 6 title fights in a row? And he's pushed every single opponent to the brink of exhaustion. I think maybe one more each and then we run it back. and see what happens. I think if we're going to see them fight a fourth time, it has to be like Pantoja loses the belt to somebody like Brandon Royval, let's say, and then Moreno beats Brandon Royval for the title, and then Pantoja, you know, wins an impressive fight, and then you have to do it again. But man, it's a tough sell to put them in there a third time when Pantoja has won three times. I mean, I know we saw it with Adesanya, but speaking of Adesanya, let's talk about the Dricus du Plessis fight and Robert Whittaker. Okay. Where do I start here? So I don't want to come out and tell you guys that I thought Dricus was going to win this fight. And since I didn't do an episode this week, I don't have any evidence as far as like a fingerprint on the internet that I was even leaning that way. All I have is a single text message that I sent a buddy of mine. And I said, I don't think it favors Robert Whittaker being such a big favorite. You know, Robert Whittaker is one of the best fighters ever. He is a freaking dog. I mean, he's only ever been knocked out once at middleweight. He was knocked out by Wonderboy, but that was at welterweight. Only ever been knocked out once at middleweight, and that was by Adesanya. So he gets TKO'd here by Dricus du Plessis. Dricus is a guy who I feel like people just want to count out. I think he's just got an unlikability to him that's hard for people to kind of get around. But it's hard to ignore what he's done in the UFC at this point. We're talking about 6 wins in a row, 6-0 in the UFC. And it's not like he's fighting bums. He's beaten Brad Tavares, submitted Darren Till, TKO'd Derek Brunson, TKO'd Robert fucking Whittaker. It's time to stop dismissing this guy. He's a legit talent. And I don't know what it is about him. Like, I can't really pinpoint what it is that makes him good. You know, when I think about him, like, his striking's not super technical. He's kind of stiff. He's kind of lumbering. He's not like a whiz at grappling. He's just like a big, strong dude that finds a way. Reminds me of Kelvin Gastelum in many ways. You know, Chael Sonnen described Kelvin Gastelum on the Ultimate Site on the Ultimate Fighter, and he said, Kelvin, I don't know what you're good at. And then after a few weeks, he's like, I figured out what you're good at. You're good at winning fights. And that's Dricus du Plessis. The guy just finds ways to win. And all due respect, I don't think it's like being more talented in there. I think he's just gritty. I think he's tough. He's strong. He's big for the division. He's got a huge frame for middleweight. And he just finds ways. And knocking out Robert Whittaker is a huge feather in his cap. Now, TKO's Robert Whittaker. Adesanya, after his last fight, was mad at du Plessis because du Plessis had made some comments about how Adesanya is not a real African. Dricus is the real African fighter in the UFC. He was born and raised in Africa, still lives there. Okay. That pissed Adesanya off. You know, here's a guy who, you know, didn't grow up in Africa, but is extremely tied to his Nigerian roots. So he found this incredibly offensive. He wants to fight Drickus. Drickus was ranked, I think, number 6 at that time. Adesanya had just beaten Alex Pereira to get his title back. And he said, Drickus is going to have to show me something to get this fight. Well, knocking out Robert Whittaker is showing you something. So Adesanya says, you know, it's time to throw all the chips on the table. He gets in the cage, gets in Drickus's face after he won the fight, and shouted some very derogatory things in his face. It's hard to tiptoe around this one, folks. I mean, it makes me uncomfortable just thinking about how I can comment on this. Take a little sip of my Russell's Reserve here. This discomfort portion of the podcast is brought to you by Russell's Reserve 10-year bourbon. One of my all-time go-tos, staple in my bar. I need another sip of this. Hold on, guys. Oh, man. All right, so Adesanya, we know he doesn't like Drickus. And he got in there and he said some things to him. There are things that, let's put it this way, if they're going to try and build this rivalry, they can't play all of this clip on ESPN. They're going to have to bleep out a good amount of it. And Drickus, you know, he didn't back down. He didn't seem intimidated being in there with Adesanya. And he didn't seem bothered by the things that Adesanya said. Like, as I said, I'm uncomfortable just talking about it right now. But he wasn't uncomfortable having these things shouted at him. And he reacted like, this guy's just a clown. He's immature. It's a shame because people look up to him. He shouldn't be conducting himself like that. All right. I don't think he could have handled it any better. So obviously, these guys are going to fight. It's going to be interesting. The buildup is going to be interesting. And here's my thought on Adesanya's behavior. I think one of two things happened. One, he got a little saucy in the stands watching the fights. You know, he's there with his buddies. His teammates are fighting. One of them had a big win earlier in the night. Another was about to have a big win later in the night. So he's throwing back a few cocktails maybe. Jumps in the cage. You know, tongue gets a little loose. Happens to the best of us. It happens to me regularly. I don't say the things that Adesanya said, but you know, I've let the tongue get a little loose here on the internet after a few bourbons. So maybe that's what happened. Maybe he was a little tipsy, a little angry, a lot angry, and he said some things. Here's my other theory. Adesanya is a master of kind of mapping out his future. In fact, after he beat Pereira, it was kind of the first time he didn't set up his next match like before he got out of the cage. Usually in the post-fight interview, not the press conference, in the interview, he sets up what he's going to do next. He says who's next. You know, he said Jared Cannonier was next. He said Robert Whittaker was next. He said Pereira was next. He called all those shots. He lined up his opponents. He didn't do that after beating Pereira. At the press conference, he said he wanted Drickus, but he had to show him something. So now, maybe what he did was, it wasn't enough to just get him to fight him. he had to go in there and go full heel. He had to go full bad guy and make Drickus look like a good guy to make the fight more marketable. I know it's a stretch, guys, but hear me out. I think he may have orchestrated the whole thing to make himself the guy that people may not be comfortable with, the guy that people may even dislike for the things he said, to make people want to see Drickus win the fight so that he can sell the fight. And if that's what he did, and he's pulling the wool over all of our eyes, the man is brilliant. If that was intentional and that was his intent to put Drickus over as the good guy, to make him the baby face, to use a pro wrestling term, God damn, that's brilliant. Or maybe he was just drunk off his ass, went in there and dropped a bunch of N-bombs. I don't know. The only person who knows is Adesanya. Just like the only person who knows if Adesanya was playing possum against Pereira is Adesanya. And he keeps his cards close to his chest. So I want to give him the benefit of the doubt and say he's kind of trying to hype the fight to make some money. And let's leave it at that. Man, my heart rate went up talking about this one, guys. I know there's not like millions of people listening to this, but whew, that escalated quickly. By the way, I've been trying to create some other content besides the MMA stuff. I realized that some of the more long-winded videos and things I wanted to do, you know, like creating another YouTube channel about the whiskey stuff, was a little too ambitious. So I'm starting to do these kind of one-minute spirit reviews. I already posted one of them on YouTube for Don Julio 70th anniversary tequila. So if you could check that out, give it a thumbs up if you don't mind, maybe even a share. I'm going to start doing more stuff like that. The 1 minute kind of like bite-sized content, the reels. I'm still not going to download TikTok. Cause I refuse. I just feel like I'm beyond the age bracket that needs to be on TikTok. But, you know, the Instagram reels, the YouTube shorts, I'm probably going to finally cave in and start creating that content. So if there's any requests that you have, any whiskeys or anything like that, that you would like a quick review of, please let me know. Send me a message, leave a comment on this show. You can leave comments on Spotify now, which, you know, I just got around to responding to those. So thank you to everybody who's been leaving comments on the Spotify. Yeah, let me know if there's like a bottle you've been thinking about picking up and, you know, you want my expertise on it. Hey, Bill, what do you think about this? And I'll put out a 1 minute whiskey review or tequila review, whatever it is, scotch. And we'll have some fun with it. All right, Dan Hooker, Jalen Turner. This was a fantastic fight. For me, this was the fight of the night. But I'm guessing somebody missed weight because this was a catch weight, and that's why it couldn't get a bonus. I enjoyed this fight more than the Moreno-Pantoja fight, which won fight of the night. I didn't think that was really fight of the night. That one wasn't even close for me. But Dan Hooker, Jalen Turner, man, I could watch these guys fight every other week. It was a split decision for Dan Hooker. It was damn close. I think Dan Hooker probably came closer to finishing the fight, but I felt like Jalen Turner did more overall damage. Those those head kicks and the cut that he opened up on Dan Hooker's head. Yeah, I don't know, man. I think I had 1 and 2 for Jalen and 3 for Dan Hooker, but 2 was kind of a coin flip. Okay, Mark's telling me that Jacob came in at 158. I'm assuming he means Jalen, because that's the only one that's close to Jacob. Did you mean Jalen, Mark? All right, so Jalen missed weight, so I'm guessing that's why they didn't get the fight of the night bonus. If there wasn't a weight miss, that would have been my pick. So Dan Hooker wins a split decision. I thought Jalen had it at the end, but when it went split decision for Dan Hooker, I was like, okay, well, you know, he almost finished him. So I would have been totally fine with a draw in this one as well. If it went 1 and 2 for Jalen Turner and then a 10-8 for Dan Hooker in the third for almost finishing him. I guess he almost finished him at the end of the second too, which probably swung a bunch of the judges. There's a whole gaggle of them. It probably swung 2 of them. Yeah, that second round was close. 1 was Jalen Turner, 3 was Dan Hooker, and 2 was like, you know, recency effect if you pick Dan Hooker. But if you look at the overall round, I think Jalen Turner won it. Let's see. Bo Nickel, 38-second knockout over Valentin Woodburn. And, you know, some people might say, like, oh, this guy wasn't even in the UFC and Bo Nickel knocked him out. Like, guys, Bo Nickel has what, 4 fights? 5 fights. All first round finishes. And all pretty much against UFC caliber talent. You know, his second fight was on the Contender Series. His third fight was on the Contender Series. His fourth fight, Jamie Pickett. This guy is, you know, he's a special talent. He really is. And now we're seeing, like, he doesn't just have world-class wrestling, but he's got hands. You know, he got a little, he was throwing the hands a little loopy, but he's still got some pop in him. There's not a lot of people that are going to be signing up to fight Bo Nickel. Like, why do you want to risk fighting a guy with only 5 fights when he's demolishing people in the first round? I say it's time for a top 15 opponent. You know, let's just cut to the chase here with Bo Nickel. Let's see him in Jack Hermanson. You know, because Jack's got good grappling. You know, he's not a great freestyle wrestler. Let's see it. Let's see Bo Nickel and Kelvin Gastelum. Let's see Bo Nickel and Imavov. Let's do it. Throw him in the top 15. Like, I'm ready to see it. I don't need to see anything else. Like, he's already on the main card of a pay-per-view. What are we waiting for, really? 38-second knockout? I don't care who the guy is. He's in the UFC. He got a call from the UFC. He's in there. Bo Nickel knocked him out in 38 seconds. Phenomenal. Phenomenal. Almost as phenomenal as Robbie Lawler's 38-second knockout over Nico Price. A walk-off knockout. And his swan song. Retirement fight for Robbie Lawler. You couldn't script it any better than that. You know, here's a guy who came into the UFC super young. Was he 20 years old when he fought Nick Diaz? Had a run in the UFC, went off, became the champ in Strikeforce, fought some other places, came back to the UFC, won the championship, had one of the greatest fights of all time with Rory McDonald. Hall of Fame level fight. Hall of Fame fighter, Robbie Lawler. Never talked shit about anybody. Just showed up and did his job. He's one of the few guys of all time who was able to just talk with his performances. Never really did interviews. Never talked shit. Never, like, did anything with social media. Never lost his temper. Even when in the loss to Ben Askren, when he was like, oh, what the fuck? And then he went and apologized to Herb Dean and said, hey, man, you're a hell of a ref. Like, how do you have a better guy to represent the sport of mixed martial arts than Robbie Lawler? And that's not to mention all the highlight reel knockouts. You know, a guy with a real sprawl and brawl strategy throughout his entire career that held up and put him into legendary status. Congratulations to Robbie Lawler on an amazing career. One of my favorite fighters of all time. Man, it's just awesome to see him go out like this. Not a lot of guys do. I think it's for keeps. Like, I don't think we'll see him back. I really hope we don't see him like show up in BKFC or something in 2 or 3 years. But I think this is it. 41 years old, 38-second knockout over a really tough guy in Nico Price. Looked phenomenal. Like, you can't script it any better than that. Congratulations to Robbie Lawler on your retirement and on a Hall of Fame career. It was awesome. Let's see. Tatsuro Taira, unanimous decision over Edgar Chiaras. So this was all Tatsuro for the first like 2 3/4 rounds, and then Edgar decided, you know, he was gonna try and mount a comeback like right at the end of the fight. And it was like every time Tatsuro shot for a takedown, Chiaras would try and jump for that guillotine. And after like the first two times it didn't work, you would think he would give up on it. But I guess he like really believes in his guillotine to the point where he was willing to keep trying it when it wasn't working. And then Tatsuro would just stay on top and pound him out. It looked like at the second round, it could have been almost stopped. When he was landing some nasty shots. But, you know, good performance from Tatsuro, who was like super young. Let me look this kid up real quick. 23 years old from Japan, Okinawa, Japan. Undefeated. 14-0. Yeah, this kid's a problem. This kid is a problem. All right, so Denise Gomes against Yasmin Yaragui. So I had one bit of analysis before this fight started. So I mentioned earlier I was at my buddy's house, so my daughter could swim at their pool and get tired and also play with their daughter, and hopefully they would tire each other out. It was to the point where the other kid was actually like going to bed, and I was still trying to get my kid to leave and go home. She wanted to just keep staying playing because my child is solar powered and does not ever get tired. So anyway, while the kids were playing, we were watching the prelims. My buddy Brian and his friend Phil, shout out to those guys for enjoying the fights with me. When they probably could have been watching golf or something else. I was like, hey, you guys know the fights are on? I may have persuaded that situation a little bit, but got them both into it. So here's what I said at the beginning of this fight. I said, Yasmin is undefeated. And then they showed Gomes, and I said, never underestimate a girl with a neck tattoo. Because if she'll do that to herself, there's no telling what she'll do to you. And sure enough, she came right out of the gate, knocked the shit out of undefeated Yasmin, and TKO'd her in 20 seconds, just like a bull out of the gate. Fantastic performance. And right after it happened, I said again, never underestimate a girl with a neck tattoo. And what can I say? I'm just the highest level analyst that exists in mixed martial arts. You know, this is the kind of breakdown that you've come to know and love here on MMA on the Rocks. May have had a couple of bourbons when I gave that analysis. May or may not have. All right, Alonzo Menafield getting the guillotine over Jimmy Crute. So, you know, this is obviously the last time they fought. It went to a draw, and everybody thought Menafield won. And Jimmy Crute in this one went for the outside single leg in the second round and got caught in a guillotine by a big, powerful dude. Now, when I teach wrestling to jiu-jitsu guys, or I teach wrestling to MMA guys, what I typically say, especially when they're very inexperienced, is never shoot an outside single in jiu-jitsu or MMA. There are a few people who can get away with outside singles in MMA. Chris Weidman is one of them. Ben Askren is another one. It'll be a really short list after that. The reason being, if you shoot with your head to the outside on a single leg, your neck is exposed if your head is too high. If your head is too low on that outside single, you risk getting your back taken. Now, in wrestling, that's not a big deal because you're not going to get choked out. You're just going to kind of get held down. You might get a little tired, but you know, you can sit out. You can do some other things. The consequences are not as dire as they are in MMA. So I always tell guys, if you're going to shoot a single, shoot with your head on the inside, and you have to finish right away. You have to commit. You have to run the pipe. You have to switch to a double. You have to, you know, go to your treetop, go to something else. You can't stay there, because with your head on the inside in MMA, you're just going to get the shit elbowed out of your face. Okay. Long way of saying Jimmy Crute had that outside single and he got his neck snatched up. That's all I was getting at. And cut his gloves off at the end. I don't know if that was just like an emotional reaction. Like he just got submitted during International Fight Week. There was, you know, emotions are running high. There was a bit of a rivalry between these two guys. So I think he might've just been upset. I don't know if it meant he was retiring or anything like that. All right. Vitor Petrino with a dominant win over Marcin Praknio. Petrino, man, is just looks like he's carved out of stone, man. He looks like a Greek statue or Brazilian statue, I should say. Looked incredible in this fight. Was just hunting Praknio down, and finally got him in that arm triangle at the end. It wasn't even like sunk in all the way. Like, I'm sure it was bad, but I think Praknio was just done. Gets a tap towards the end of the third round. Let's see. And then a couple of knockouts to start off the card. And then the first fight, Esteban Ribovic, unanimous decision over Kamuela Kirk. It's good to see Kamuela Kirk in the UFC, since he's the guy that Billy Quarantillo beat on the Contender Series to get into the UFC. So it's good to see that he found his way there. Fortunately, he didn't find his way to a victory. So that's UFC 290. Man, give me all your thoughts, guys. Like, there's a hell of a lot that went on this card. It was pretty epic. Awesome International Fight Week card, I'd say. But give me your thoughts if I left anything out or if you disagree with anything. You know, I always entertain other opinions. Like, at the end of the day, I may not give a shit, but I'll entertain it. All right, real quick. Let's talk about Sean Strickland. He looked good last week. You know, getting the win over Magomedov was impressive, and it was even more impressive doing it after that eye poke in the first round, because that was pretty brutal. You know, we saw it happen pretty bad to his teammate Chris Curtis not that long ago. Actually, in Chris Curtis's last two fights, you know, the fouls affected him. But yeah, Sean Strickland looked good. Somebody was saying, I think I was listening to John Anik or something, they were saying like title shot for Sean Strickland, but I don't see how you could do that when Jared Cannonier is just, you know, coming off a big win over Marvin Vettori and has a win over Sean Strickland. So I don't see how Sean Strickland jumps the line over Jared Cannonier, but yeah, I think he looked good. I think we can do... I would like to see Marvin Vettori and Sean Strickland. I think that would be a fun fight. I think Dricus du Plessis and Sean Strickland would be fun. But obviously, you know, Dricus is more than likely got an engagement coming up in a few weeks. Let's see. Was there anything else that really stood out to me last week? Because I don't want to spend too much time on this. I'm sure you guys had enough of this card. Okay, Rinat Fakhretdinov. This guy's a fucking problem. Made Kevin Lee's return to the UFC last only 55 seconds. And from what I understand, Kevin Lee has already been re-released. So comes in here against this monster and then gets re-released like just as fast as he got re-signed. So that's unfortunate for Kevin Lee. You know, hopefully he gets his bearings and ends up, you know, somewhere like, I'm sure the PFL or Bellator will snatch him up. I think his brother fights in Bellator. Let's take a look at next week's fight card. Holly Holm and Mayra Bueno Silva. I don't even know. I don't know, man. This is a tough one. This is a tough one to follow a card like UFC 290. Usually I'm always trying to be like glasses half full and I'm like, well, at least we have fights, but it's like, man, this is rough. We got Walt Harris and Josh Parisian on here. Otman Azaitar and Francisco Prado. That should be pretty good. Otman, we're going to see how he bounces back from the knockout loss to the steamroller. Oh, Terrence McKinney's on this card against Nazim Sadikov. That's a good fight. Okay. Yeah, I can get off the couch for that. Man, this one's rough, guys. This one's rough. I don't know what to say. Maybe we better just call it a day. Watch the card and then we'll see. Like, maybe it'll be a pleasant surprise. I don't want to shit on this card, but it's hard after the show that we just got to experience, International Fight Week and everything like that. So Mark says, I'm going to find an excuse to go grocery shopping next weekend. Well, Mark, if you see any of my 1 minute whiskey reviews that may or may not come out this week, maybe you'll have an excuse to go to the liquor store. Not that you need one if you listen to this show. And if you do listen, and you enjoy the show, maybe you want to buy some merchandise, MMA on the Rocks, t-shirt, tank top, or hoodie. Unless you live in Antarctica or something, I don't think you're going to be buying a hoodie anytime soon. But the website is reaper1.co. The promo code MMARocks10 will save you 10% on your order, whether you are buying my merchandise or not. Full disclosure, if you buy my merchandise, I will spend the money on alcohol. So just putting that out there. But I think the shirts are cool. I think the tank tops are cool. I'm pretty sure the hoodies are cool, but I still don't have one myself. I'm living in Florida. I never really had the need to ask for one. In any case, I'm glad I got on here on a Sunday once again and was able to do an episode for you guys despite being totally run down by my ever energetic daughter who is just going to suck the life out of me for the next 7 days. And I'm going to enjoy every minute of it, but I'm also counting the days to when my wife gets back and we can restore the balance to our household and, you know, go back to kind of like co-parenting. I don't know. Is it still co-parenting if you're in a relationship and you live together? I don't know. Is co-parenting when you don't live together? I don't know. I don't know what the terminology is, but I can't wait for my wife to get back. I miss her dearly, and I need help. So send help. So until next time, pray for me, guys. Cheers, everybody. Goodbye.